felt love, really, honestly, for the first time. It's like the weight of the world came off my shoulders. The lying, everything about my life, it just shed.
Welcome to the Mocktails Made Me podcast. Join your hosts, Matt and Britt, as they explore the transformative impact of reducing or eliminating alcohol. Each episode contains firsthand accounts from people who have reduced or eliminated alcohol from their life, which has resulted in launching new endeavors and reaching personal milestones. Tune in to hear these inspiring stories and the remarkable impacts of living alcohol-free and discover what the mocktails make them do.
Welcome to the Mocktails Made Me podcast. Today we are thrilled to have Marcy Hopkins, the dynamic host of Wake Up with Marcy, join us. Marcy is a passionate sober advocate and a newly published author of Chaos to Clarity, Seeing the Signs and Breaking the Cycles. We'll discuss her journey with alcohol, the pivotal moments that led to her sobriety, insights from her book, and her experience with AA. Marcy will also share her best advice for anyone struggling with addiction. Join us for an inspiring and motivational conversation as we explore her path to clarity and her mission to help others find hope and healing. Welcome, Marcy. We are so happy to have you on here today. We really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us.
Thank you.
So great to be here and to see you guys in person. We've been connected on Instagram and now I actually get to see you.
I know. Yeah, that's the best part about these. I'm like, oh, I get to see their faces and their reactions.
Exactly. It's like you feel like you know each other a little bit, but then it's like now we really get to connect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a different level.
Now we're not just picture friends.
Exactly. Or real friends.
Yeah, we're real friends. Exactly. We stepped it up a whole level from picture friends.
I mean, video calls do that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. They have a way of doing that. Yeah. All right. So I guess we should just start with the beginning, maybe introduce yourself to our audience a little bit and then kind of, I know you have a book out, so we're not going to make you like spill all the beans. So because before we want people to read the book, but kind of give us an idea of like when you started drinking and then maybe like to where your trampoline moment felt like that you like had to turn your stuff around. And then after that, I kind of would really like to kind of divulge into AA with you. I know you really like the program and I know you've worked it. And so I'd like to just get more information and talk to you about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my drinking, the first time I made a real choice to drink, because my mother used to give me alcohol sometimes whenever I had a stomach ache or some kind of problem. It was my mom's answer. So she felt like even at 8 years old, if I had a stomach ache, here, have a sip of my margarita. Maybe it'll help you go to the bathroom. You know, that's where we start learning these behaviors, right? That alcohol's an answer. So, but my mother got remarried at 12 and there was a lot of trauma that had happened in my life with abuse, physical abuse from my mom's boyfriends, abandonment issues, because my mother, to me, I understand now in a different way, but at that time basically left me because I went to live with my grandparents and my father left me. So I had a lot of issues leading up to this time that I was 12. My mother remarried. I thought we were going to have this fairy tale life after this. And I drank at the wedding champagne. And it was, you know, the first time I felt like this escape and it was fun. And I felt like, wow, like here's the answer, right? Like now I can escape. And if I ever want to have fun in life, well, this is the way to go. So not too long after that, I will say I didn't really get in trouble or anything. I was put together to bed that night and the next day, like nothing was really said that I can recall was said to me. So that kind of told me it was okay. So about 6 months into the marriage, my mother, my new stepdad, sexual abuse began. So, and at this time, I was 12 and I was in eighth grade at this time. And that was just a really, really hard time. I started drinking on the weekends, failing school. I just wanted to escape. At that point, I actually wanted to end my life. I didn't think that there was any way out. And my mother actually never left my stepfather till several years later, even after I told her twice. And so during these years, my high school years, it was escaping on the weekends. Almost every Saturday night was a blackout. I didn't drink during the weeks, but I did drink on the weekends heavily. And then once I left high school, left my mom's house, because as immediately, I mean, she was an alcoholic, so she was drinking all the time, and it was a very difficult place to be. So I left, and I probably basically drank every day of my life, except for the few times I got in trouble, until the day I quit. And that was when I was, well, I think I was 47 years old. I'm about 55 now, and almost. But that was my answer to everything. I didn't know any other way, whether I was happy or sad or coping with my past or a good day at work or a bad day at work. I always had to have my glass of wine after work. So it was just very much part of my life. But when I got into my 40s, I actually got in front of the camera. I've always worked in media. I worked for Fox Cable Group in many capacities. Actually, when I retired there, I was the director of on-air promotions for FX. So I had a successful career. I had even a successful life. I got married, and I had two kids, and I hit a time where I tried to change my career, and that was to get in front of the camera. And it was that time I started drinking even more, because that became my liquid courage. And I did not feel that I was worthy, because you're being judged all the time. And here I am, someone that has no self-love, no self-worth, no confidence, and I'm putting myself in a place to be judged all the time. So liquid courage became my friend, which was wine. And my last day of drinking, my final straw for me, life was pretty much falling apart. It's one of those things where it's not like you go to sleep one night, you wake up the next day and go, oh, this is a problem. It's something that builds, right? It's something that
I've been. It ebbs and it flows a little bit too. Cause like,
yeah,
there'll be sometimes when you're like starting to figure things out and feel things feel calmer. So you calm the drinking down, even though it's still there. But then something triggers it. And then you're like,
yeah, I never did not drink. It might have been one or two glasses, or if I was going through a really hard time, it would become a lot more.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like it would like have its ebbs and flows where you
the amount of it, but there was never abstinence unless I got in trouble. So my last day of drinking, I'd gone on a modeling gig, had my liquid courage, went out with my friend afterwards, and it's all in the book, but I ended up getting a DUI and I was having trouble in my marriage. I just wasn't happy in life at all. And I went to bed that night just angry I got caught, you know, angry about my life, angry it was everybody else's fault because I was the victim. I was always the victim. And something happened that next morning when I woke up. I was in bed and with a terrible hangover and saying, like, what am I doing? And I'm about to lose everything. If you looked at my life from the outside, I looked like I had a life everybody would have wanted. But for me and what was going on behind closed doors, it was awful. It was awful life. But I was about to lose everything that I had built really because of my drinking, because of my pain, because of my trauma. And it was really for me, God stepped in and I finally was able to admit to myself that I was an alcoholic. I had gone into the rooms before. I said, hi, I'm Marcy, I'm an alcoholic, but I really at the core didn't believe it. I was still comparing myself to others. I was still trying to figure it out for myself. But at this point I knew I needed help or my life was never going to be the same. And I went downstairs and I'd always been seeking love. And I'm sure you can relate to this, Britt. It was about seeking love, feeling love, and wanting love. For if you said we align somewhat in our past, I just, from my sexual abuse and the abandonment, I didn't know how to be loved or really feel love. I knew I was always seeking it. And at that point, my husband embraced me and I felt love really honestly for the first time. And it was like the weight of the world came off my shoulders, the lying, everything about my life, it just shed. And I started AA that day. And I had, like I said, I had started it before, but this time it was different.
Yeah. When you said like how your husband was kind of like, he was there for it, like he wasn't going to leave. I remember when I quit drinking, I like had lost my job. I had all these things, and everyone I'd ever been with, whether it be my parents or a partner, it always been it had never been unconditional love. Mm-hmm. So I literally was like, thought Matt was just going to be like, peace out. You're having a hard time in life. Never talking to you again. And he looked at me, he was like, why would I leave? Like, he was so confused by the fact that I thought,
yeah,
he was going to pick up and leave. And it was the first time I had felt unconditional love my entire life.
I know. And it's really, something shifts in you when you finally can open your eyes to it. And I just felt like I was, even though I wanted it so badly, I was also always fighting it. I would sabotage things before I would allow somebody else to hurt me. I mean, I was always waiting for that person to hurt me. And I wasn't going to allow them because I was going to hurt them first. Meaning like if I was in a relationship, things weren't really going well. I mean, I would find someone else. I'd set up a whole nother relationship just so I could just transition and never feel the real emotions that go with that.
And you thought it feels like you're filling a void, but really we were just hurting ourselves in the process.
100%. I mean,
being with people that actually probably didn't love us the way we needed to be loved.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. When you don't have self-love, self-worth, you are always looking to others to dictate truly how you feel about yourself.
But when you're not taught to love each other and the people around you, like I know, like, my family is like, my mom is very much like your mother, and my dad is the biggest alcoholic I know, but he did well. But they don't love each other. So when you're, and my stepmom doesn't love each other herself. Like, so it's like, you don't see in a good example what it's like to love yourself. And then they treat you so poorly that you don't learn how to do it to yourself. And so you're just, I feel like it's like, I say like, throwing spaghetti at a wall and hoping one piece is going to stick because you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I will say my grandmother, I was with my grandparents from like 6 to 12 before I moved in, my mom and stepdad. And thankfully I had my grandmother. I mean, during those very important years, very grateful to have her. And even my grandfather, I know he loved me, but he had a real trigger temper. I mean, so that there was the fear of the next time grandpa was going to blow up. So that was hard to live with, but you know, they didn't show it. Right. So they stayed married, but my grandmother was always leaving. And so, I mean, I get that, but at least at the core, I felt like I had one person, and that was my grandmother, thank God.
Yeah, that support really does like help in times of need. But I feel like those lessons that you're supposed to learn in those formative years, if you don't learn them, learning them outside as an adult it's a challenge. Oh, yeah,
I wasn't learning anything. I was just kind of dictating.
Throw the spaghetti at the wall.
Right?
You just kept sliding down slowly and surely.
Yeah, I just want to say you guys are both so strong and courageous, like inspirational. I mean, to see the courage that you both have and the environments that you are both in, and to just keep going and pull yourself out, like independently of anyone else. I mean, it was the two of you that, you know, did that for you. And it's inspirational.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Yeah. I tell you, having that pain in your past, right? but we're very fortunate to have found men that support us and love us. So that I am eternally grateful to my husband to love me and see something inside of me that I didn't even see. And, but you become, I think, just very resilient, right? I mean, you just like, you're going to make, you can either fall down and never get up or make sure that you get up no matter how hard it is. And that's what I felt like I was doing for most of my life.
The just the constant struggle, it never stopped.
Yeah. So
finally, when you finally get to that point where you're like, I can't do this anymore. It's like your trash compactor got too full and it blew up. And the blow up is like, it's almost therapeutic because you're like, okay, it's all gone to shit for a second. Like time to get back up, but at least it's clean.
It's like what you learn in the 12 step, right? The foundation.
I don't know anything about the 12 step.
What's that?
I don't know. I've never worked any of the program or anything like
Basically, in the beginning, you're taught to understand that you've basically built a foundation of life on you built the building, but the foundation was extremely unstable. So at some point, it's going to come crashing down. So when it finally came crashing down for me, I was able to start at the floor, at the ground level, and build back up.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I live like the most incredibly beautiful, strong life, abundant life.
You've been sober like 10, 12
nine, years? October 4th will be 9 years.
Congratulations. Oh, yeah. That's amazing. That's goals over there.
Yeah.
Thank you. I got to tell you, I mean, I truly admire people that don't have a program because I couldn't imagine not doing it without the program. I wouldn't have been able to do it. But I will tell you that those 12 steps, that's where all my healing was done. And that was pretty spectacular to actually get to the foundation, the core of what the heck was going on with me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then just to build in the spirituality and the tools and rewiring my brain, literally rewiring my whole thought process. So
that's so important. Like one of my favorite books is Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself.
Mm.
And he explains like how our bodies, when we start trying to make a good life for ourselves, they react kind of poorly because they're used to getting their dopamine from whether it be remorse or chaos or whatever the negative thing we were doing. Mm-hmm. That's what our subconscious is programmed to get its dopamine from. So it takes a while to settle into like no chaos.
Right. Well, it's just like any of these chemicals that are inside of us, right? Our bodies should, for the most part, be able to help us sleep, help us to feel good about ourselves, you know, feel elevated in all these different ways. And sometimes those things get messed up naturally. But when you're putting a substance in your body, you are destroying all of the natural flow and chemical balance in your body.
You've depleted your homeostasis.
Yeah. Yeah, it's literally a poison. It's doing what any poison does. Yeah.
And it's a drug. Like it's like any other drug, but it's probably one of the most hardcore drugs you can do, but you can just go get it and nobody can tell you no is the hardest part.
Yeah.
We interviewed about it.
During COVID, right? Yeah. I mean, you could buy alcohol because they knew. I mean, that was basically someone's drug, their life support.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the hospitals would have been flooded if people could get their alcohol, right?
That's sad. Another woman that we were talking to on a previous podcast, we were talking about how even like with pharmaceuticals now, because it's like the street drugs with pretty names, but she said her actual street drug dealer cared more about her health than her doctor. Her doctor would keep over prescribing, but her drug dealer on the street was like, you can't have any more. You've had too much.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like that's how gross.
That's frightening.
Yeah. That's really frightening.
Well, it just shows you they don't, I'm not saying all doctors.
That's, there's good doctors,
they don't care. It's just like, write it off. Right.
Yeah.
Get out of my care. I don't want to deal with you.
Yeah, exactly. For-profit healthcare is an abomination, but that's a whole separate topic that I've had horrible experience. I have an autoimmune disease, so I've had to navigate the U.S. healthcare system more than I would ever have wanted to.
Oh, that's got to be so hard.
Oh,
lots of phone calls, doctor visits, all the fun stuff.
Brittany getting stressed out.
She gets more stressed out than I do on some of this.
Yeah.
Well, my partner, nothing can happen.
I get it.
I've lived with it for 15 years or so at this point. So I'm like, hey, I'll get the medicine, you know. To go back, you know, we started talking about your book, Chaos to Clarity. What led to you like putting pen to paper and getting that book done?
Well, coming from the acting world, I thought I wanted to do a short film on the first story that I share in the book. And so I had something in my head, like I wanted to do something to get out. And then it was maybe going to be a TEDx talk to talk about how sexual abuse literally changes you mind, body, spirit. And I got pushback on that, like that nobody does anything about sexual abuse or that's not really something to talk about. I'm like, okay.
It keeps happening because nobody wants to talk about it and they hush it under a rug and they're quiet and embarrassed. But the person doing it is the person that should be embarrassed, not the person it's happening to.
100%.
Talk about embarrassed.
They don't put anyone in jail like for this.
No.
It's insane.
It's pretty rare. But so I had kind of in my head that, you know, I some things going back and forth. And when I started doing my show and people started hearing my story and I started becoming very open on social media about my story and recovery, I started getting asked, when are you going to do a book? You've got to do a book. And I thought to myself, I'm never doing a book. I can't even imagine me doing a book. I'm just like, who am I to do a book? And I kept getting signs. I mean, God just kept putting things in my life that kept kind of pushing me towards it. I mean, I tried to write it on my own. I took programs and it just became so overwhelming. I kind of put it to the side. And there was a time I'd just written kind of like short bits. It wasn't like I actually went to write my book, but there was a time I had one final sign and I had said to myself, all right, I'm going to write this book. God is guiding me to write this book. And I went outside on my patio or my deck and I said, okay, God, I'm going to write this book. And no lie, I mean, this is something I share in my book a lot about God signs. There was a rainbow that appeared. There were two love doves that came and sat on my roof. And there was a dragonfly that flew by me, which dragonflies are another big part of my story. And I just started crying. And I knew that I couldn't do it on my own. I actually had someone help me with it. It was like a co-writing, but it was my story, my name, but this person actually like was typing everything and putting the pieces together, thankfully.
That part's hard, like figuring out what chapter goes first. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, and I'm not gonna claim that I've taken any sort of writing courses that would put
me- your story, and it's still your book.
It's my story, it's all of my information, and I just needed someone to to just piece it together for me, right? So I had a publisher and such, and that's what they do. And, but I remember talking to my husband about it, and with that, it cost money. And I was giving him the financials, and, you know, he kind of stepped back, and I was like, do you think that I really want to do this, babe? Like, this is so much work. I said, God is guiding me to do this. I have to do it. And that's the only thing I can say. God really guided me to do this. And the universe, higher power, whoever, whatever term you want to use. But I knew that I had to get my book out there.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. Well, it was a really good book. I really enjoyed reading it. And everyone else should read it too. I will have the link.
Oh, yeah.
I will have the Amazon link. Is there any other places for purchase or mostly just Amazon, right?
It's Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, and Goodreads. That's what I know of.
Oh, okay. Cool. Okay, we'll put some of the links in there so everybody can find the book.
Thank you.
Yeah, great book. Approachable. It's like you're almost riding along with you through some of the events that you went through in your life. And like I said earlier, to see you just like keep going and get to the place you are now is just awesome.
Like, yeah, thank you. I just feel like I just wanted to connect with people. Even if you didn't have my story, you have a story, and we always can find a place to connect within that. And just how the healing began and the tools and action items and education that I learned myself to hopefully be able to help somebody else move in their path, even if it's just to make a choice. And then to shift your mindset and how to do that and start to live in gratitude and forgive and become more spiritual. And so much of that stuff just keeps you stuck. It keeps you in your past. And we've got to do the work, but at the end of the day, it is so worth it.
Yeah. And the work and not living, learning to not live in the past, like, because there's really absolutely nothing you can do with the past. It's already been done. It's already been said. And though you learn lessons or you have like, we have those terrible experiences, we also have a lot of good experiences that we've made since then. And then we have a lot to be made. And so by keeping focused in that direction, I think is like really what helps you get sober. But when you stick to, because I do stints without alcohol for months, 7 months, 9 months. But I never healed anything. And so once I was near something that triggered me, it was done. Because I didn't fix any of the problems. I would either just work too much or I wouldn't see my friends, and I would be like doing so many things that I couldn't drink, but I never could just sit with myself and not drink.
Yeah. In 12-step program, we call that a dry drunk. So it's someone that's still living in the past and in the pain. And I mean, right, drinking is a symptom of something else. And most times you are masking some sort of traumatic event, or you maybe have a mental disorder and that's, you're trying to self-medicate. That a lot of times is what happens, or some traumatic thing happens in our life and we start using a drug or alcohol to mask that, and then our bodies become dependent. But the good thing is that for the most part, if you do the work, I mean, I'd never promised that anybody could to get sober, because my mother tried for years and her alcoholism killed her. So she sadly was not able to move on. But I believe that is because she didn't really work the program. She didn't really work on the trauma that sat inside of her.
Yeah. That's the real disease right there, is the trauma. The trauma is the disease, and the alcohol is the coping mechanism for the disease.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. All right. So next thing, we have like two more things for you. Okay, so first, if you could give someone out there that's just that's struggling, one piece of advice, like what would be, like, what's your first step? What would you tell them to do?
Well, first I'd say to be kind to yourself and not beat yourself up, because this road is a hard road and a relapse is a relapse, but we always have a new day. And so just start over, but don't hate yourself if you make a mistake.
I really like that, because that sense, I like to tell people too that go, like, say they go 3 months and then they like relapse and they have a drink for a couple of nights and they start again and they're so hard on themselves. I'm like, if you had a friend that didn't drink for 3 months and then had a few drinks, would you hate them?
Right.
Or you'd be like, that person got some self-control.
Yeah, that's almost 100 days.
Yeah, like you're not going to look at that person and be like, God, what a wash. They just went 90 days with no alcohol and now they've had a few drinks. You would think that's cool. Like that's really, that takes some self-control.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say that it's not about willpower. So anybody out there that's struggling, this is not about willpower. There's so many things that go into not drinking and learning how not to drink and rewiring your brain and the way that you think and what you go to when something does trigger you. There are a lot of things to learn, and there are a lot of daily things to help you through this process. So please, if you are listening and are struggling or want to quit, don't think that this is something just like, oh, well, why can't I decide to, and why can't I just stop? There's so much more that goes into it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I don't know if you know what the mocktails made me means, but the mocktail, it's kind of a play on words, like all those shirts that are like tequila made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
So like the mocktail made me do it.
Yeah.
What did the mocktail make you do?
Well,
he always laughs at me when I ask this question.
I like it. It's a good question. That's our name. Yeah. You know, we talked for weeks about the name of this. And
yeah.
Good.
Well, my mind went two ways. The mocktail made me remember the next day because I wasn't.
I like that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
That's a good one.
So much anxiety from trying to fill in those blackout moments. Like, I still sometimes, yeah, think about that.
And the other thing is, the mocktail also gave me another option to drink because I only drink water and coffee. So now I got a mocktail.
Okay, let you spice it up.
Thank you.
Exactly. I have so many options now.
I know, absolutely. And then where can everybody find you? I know there's a few places. You have your show. I think you have your website. You have online.
So wakeupwithmarcy.com. Is where you can find most about me. Wake Up with Marcy is a talk show that is nationally syndicated. It's in parts of California. It's on WLNY TV in New York, New Jersey. That's a CBS owned affiliate, but you can see it on YouTube. And the show is really, this was my baby from the start, from inception. I mean, on my path to healing, I knew that I wanted to share stories of hope. And that's why I launched Wake Up with Marcy. And it's just, there's so much inspirational empowerment, great stories of hope, education, resources. And so I love the people that I meet on my show. And then my book, again, we talked about where you could find it. Always can go to Amazon.com. And honestly, I'm very active on Instagram. I have a Wake Up with Marcy account, and I've also started a Chaos with Clarity. Chaos. Oh my God. Chaos to Clarity with Marcy. See, I just changed it from host to talking. Chaos to Clarity with Marcy. So I wanted to add my book in there, and it's just, all about ways that we can, I don't know, keep sober and be inspired and know that life is good without it. But if you just Google Marcy Hopkins, Marcy with an I, you'll find me.
Yeah. I watched a couple episodes of your The Wake Up with Marcy. It's awesome. Your guest, I may be like tangentially related to your target audience. But even I was interested in the one you had on with the matcha and putting that into like those products. Congrats on the new studio also.
Thank you. Yeah, started shooting at the new studio. And so I have to run an idea. I got another book in me now. I'm going to start working with Mike Diamond. We're going to write a book about helping teens, parenting teens. But here's another God inspiration that won't leave me, right? If something doesn't leave you, that means you're supposed to do it. Mm-hmm. But I want to write a book about the first 30 days of sobriety.
Ooh, and that's a good one. That's a good topic. Yeah.
That's a great topic.
Yeah. So
I didn't like those days at all.
No, right? Like, wouldn't you love it if you had somebody to like tell you day by day and walk you with, you know, hold your hand through it? Like,
I did the first 90 days. I felt like garbage for 90 days at least.
Well, yeah. I was going to do the 90 days, but I thought that I would do it in a way that it was 30 chapters, 30 days.
I like, hey, you have to get through 30 days to get to 90. I like it.
Yeah. So it would be kind of like maybe I'll have a way to continue the support, but let's get through these first 30 days together.
Yeah, because that's true. You have to get through the first 30, get to the next 30. You know, you just have to kind of
keep it. Brittany, I did think about doing the first 90 days because you have to make that commitment to the 90 days. And I was just like, damn, those are the first 30 days.
I was like a hermit. I didn't want to see people.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to talk to people. I also gave up Adderall that my doctor was overprescribing. Mm. I was taking 80 milligrams of Adderall a day on top of weekend worrying, drinking, and
weekend.
4 days a week, probably. Yeah. I was highly intoxicated. Yeah. And then
it was tough.
Did you have, do you have ADHD?
Yeah, but I just needed to give up everything.
Yeah.
Because I was way overly stimulated. I think I've had it since I was a child, but I think it came from trauma because I couldn't focus. But I think it all what I thought was really bad ADHD or what they were thinking it was actually just my brain on so much trauma that it couldn't think. Because now that I'm peaceful, I can think and I don't need
it. It's so interesting you say that. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't focus in school to save my life.
Well, yeah, I couldn't either until they gave me drugs. And then they're like, you will focus and you will, you will produce and you'll be a good student. But, and so as I never fixed the trauma. And so the Adderall would help me focus in life. But now that I don't have trauma and I have peace, I don't even feel the need to go back to the doctor and start small again because my brain can actually think thoughts.
Yeah, it's like,
well, you know, your best advocate for yourself. I saw a woman, she's in the program. Well, I don't think she's in the program, but she's sober. And she said she was on Adderall. She had ADHD and she started using a new natural supplement. So if you decide you were curious about it, she seems to really like it. And it's not a drug.
Yeah, that might be really nice for me also. I just was kind of like, my body needs a break from everything.
Yeah.
Since I lost my job, I had time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you guys are doing great now, trying to help other people. So thank you for what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. Oh,
absolutely.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on. Yeah, and thank you. Hopefully we can have you on again.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Spread the word.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye. Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to the Mocktails Made Me podcast. We truly appreciate your support. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, subscribe, and share to help spread the word about the rewarding benefits of reducing or eliminating alcohol. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at The Mocktails Made Us for more updates and exclusive content. Join us next time for more inspiring stories and remarkable impacts of living alcohol-free. Discover what the mocktails can make possible.